This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua En Teik. Malaysia still practices the death penalty. More than 1,000 inmates are on death row today, and according to the de facto law minister, 651 Malaysians have been executed since 1992. Amnesty International Malaysia recently did a social experiment to change the way we talk about the death penalty, and here to tell me more is Amnesty International Malaysia's Acting Executive Director, Gwen Lee. Gwen, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell me about this experiment and what does it entail?
So, death penalty is one of the area of focus of Amnesty International Malaysia since 2014. And Amnesty International has been campaigning for the death penalty for the past 40 years. The death penalty always associate with dark crimes and taboos that public doesn't want to talk about. So, during the brainstorm meeting, we discussed about something that has nothing to do with the death penalty, but it has linked to it. So after a session of brainstorm, we think about food, like because Malaysians love food. Then we thought about it again and again, and then it's like, oh, maybe we should have a link to the last meal of the death row. So this is how the idea came about. So since 2014, like AI Malaysia has hosted a lot of awareness campaign through film screening, forum, like photo exhibition, and then all these initiative are like we can only reach that many people on the ground. So that's why we have this social experiment, because during the social experiment we film it, and then after that we put together a video, and then we hope that with this online platform we're able to reach more people, and then it's something very fresh, because this is something to do with food. Like, it's no longer, you know, it's about dark crimes and stuff. Yeah.
So what is the last meal? A person on death row before the execution, what do they get?
So this information we did not, I mean, like most of the information that we can get online are like through articles, and then so there's no really a public and information from the authorities. So like we gather this information from the articles. So like after doing a quick research on it, so we decided to serve four different countries, from USA, Taiwan, India, and also Malaysia. So yeah, and then the presentation that we did is not a presentation that is like exactly the same that what the prison served it to the death row. It is because there's no way to get a confirmation of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
Is it because it's a secret, or does the prison department not provide information about it?
For the Malaysia authorities, yes, we do not get any information. It's almost like from the prison department, like it's almost not possible to get any information from them. Like the information that we get about the death penalty, like is almost mostly they are all from the parliamentary reply. So this is why, like even you search on Google, like the article, because it's mostly from the article and also from the magazine. So like the picture of the food normally look prettier. Mm. So like if you think about it, like if it's one of the food that we decided to serve was the tomato salad in India. Like, so the death row inmates actually, from what we gathered, the death row inmates can actually ask for what they want. So there's a budget like of it, so you probably cannot order lobster, for example. So you know, like, and then one of them is like in India, like this death row inmates was like he asked for a basket of tomato. This is why it's served to them. Yeah.
How much time do the person on death row just before the execution do they have with the family members?
I can only share with you all, like with from the personal experience that I have. We have a few imminent execution in these few years. The family have about 1 to 2 hours, if not mistaken. This is only the sharing that the family member told us, like how long they actually met with the family members who are going to be executed.
Right.
Yeah.
Any mention of whether they had the privilege of a last meal?
We didn't really talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess every single time when we talk to the family members, they are normally very, very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Like we also have to take care of, like, you know, like have to be a bit more sensitive when we talk to them.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So coming back to the experiment, how many people participate in?
We have this experiment, because this is the first social experiment that Amnesty International Malaysia ever hosted. So we targeted to a very small amount. Like it's a small group. So we targeted 30 people, and then we have 27 people who actually came and participated. So it was quite. Because people don't really know, they only know it's a social experiment, and then we never really disclose what is it about. And then it was before the dinner started, it was a very kind of like a social kind of thing. Like, you know, like come and then you chill and then you talk to people and have, you know, like chit chat, stuff like that. It was quite nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And then was dinner served, or were they given a menu to select what?
We printed the menu on the, like, and placed it on the table. So we didn't let them choose. So we presented. So they are served all four meals from the countries that we selected, and then it is not like for example. The one that represent USA is a steak. We didn't serve them a whole steak, so it's like a portion of steak.
Mm-hmm.
And then so all four types of food are like a small portion of everything. But mm-hmm. I had the food; it's quite filling.
Yes, four servings, right?
Yeah.
So how did they react, and how did you reveal that what was going on?
Yeah, so we let people eat until about, like, we have staff and volunteers who help us on that day. So like when about 70% of people who had almost finishing their meal, we turned off the light, and then we just showed the video that we call in our operation, we call it a review video. So then in the video it has like question like, what if we told you that this is your last meal? And then we presented some of the facts about death penalty in Malaysia. And then it ended with how do you feel about your meals now? So the reaction that we got from the participants are what we hope for. And then it is quite nice to hear that this is a good experience for them. And then we also collected some of the feedback. One of them is he or she never expected every single meal has a value, especially for the death penalty. Make me want to fight the death penalty more. The other person said that excellent experience, and even if I have worked for death penalty before, having to put myself in the shoes of a prisoner is so surreal. So like, this is why I think that the experiment is small, but I think it's quite impactful. Yeah.
How does it compare to what you mentioned earlier, previous campaigns of film screening or photo exhibition, when it's more gruesome, more visceral? Did something like this generate more discussion?
I guess there are pros and cons in both way of campaigning and create awareness, because like we have one of the awareness campaign that we did for 2 years was we have our jail cell, the real size jail cell that is according to the old Pudu jail, like that's how that's the solitary confinement in that jail. It generate a lot of it's generally a lot of like question, and also like people are interested because we put the jail cell in the middle of the mall. Like, so like people will come and look at it. So yes, like with those kind of campaign, awareness campaign, then you're able to have conversation with these people. But like every year we only do this once. So like we can only like reach like maybe 40,000 to 60,000 at one go, and then that's it. Like the conversation, because I think Malaysian it's a bit difficult to keep the conversation going if there's no like, you know, things that people are interested. So like it's always the October that we have this discussion and everything, and then we die out, and then we wait for another year, right? So like with this social experiment, because like I said just now, we also after the social experiment, we launched the video of the social experiment. So we hope that this video will bring us more discussion and it can reach more people.
What do you think of the current awareness level of Malaysians towards the death penalty?
I guess we are, like, from the experience that I have, we're always at the level of basic awareness. So whenever, like, we always do the event or the awareness campaign in Selangor and Kuala Lumpur and Klang Valley, right? So we thought we reach out to a lot of people. So in 2015, we bring our campaign to Penang. And then, not surprising that a lot of people don't know about this. So, like, I think the awareness generally is not too high. There's always awareness campaign need to be done, because I guess when we talk about death penalty, people are just think that, you know, like associated with criminal. Like they don't really know that the death penalty is so close to them. Like for example, like the drug cases and stuff. Like if you are at the wrong place at the wrong time, like you might be arrested. Like. And then you're sentenced to death. But a lot of us do not know that. So, like, they just assume that, you know, like, I'm not a bad person. I'm following the rules and it shouldn't be a problem to me.
I'm speaking today to Gwen Lee, Acting Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia. We're talking about this campaign to raise awareness about the death penalty. We'll talk more after a short break. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. My name is Chua Antik. On the show today is Gwen Lee, Acting Executive Director of Amnesty International Malaysia. It's World Day Against the Death Penalty recently on October 10th, and Amnesty International Malaysia did a social experiment to raise awareness about the death penalty. We've kind of gone through the mechanics of the experiment in part one of the interview. And Gwen, you were mentioning how a lot of people still don't know what the death penalty is about, except just at the very surface level. And you were mentioning previous campaigns, you would have a replica of the solitary confinement in the middle of a mall. Is that still the current practice of putting someone on death row in solitary confinement?
Yeah, I mean, like, it is still in the practice. Like, if one sentenced to death, then it is the jail cell for the person would be the solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long would they have to be in solitary confinement?
So from my experience, this is purely because we don't have like a lot of the information are not public, and so that this is purely like the cases that we have came across, and also my experience. Like for a person. To like from the first day that you are caught until, you know, like you're sentenced to death by the High Court, it's probably going to take you about 4 to 6 years. And then like once you are sentenced to death, then you'll go into the solitary confinement. So then after that, you can appeal to the Court of Appeal and then the Federal Court. So these two court process would maybe take you another 4 to 6 years again, and then once you finish exhausted all the process in the federal court, then the death row inmates can apply for the clemency. So when you are, and the clemency appeal doesn't really have any period, like how long is it going to be. So like looking at that, like death row inmates can be easily in the death row for 10 years or more, and then we'll be in solitary confinement. Yeah.
How much of the day is spent in solitude? Because what about food? And is there time for exercise or any interaction?
Yeah, again, like all those information are not made public. So we only get this information informally from the death row inmate's family or the death row, you know, the death row inmates sharing with the family.
Mm-hmm.
So what we kind of gather is there will be about 1 or 2 hours a day that they can come out from the cell and then have an interaction with their fellow inmates who are in the solitary confinement. And then there are sometimes in the week that they can talk to the people who come in to do religious service. So that one, because I had never been to the prison and do any visits, so I cannot give you like any more detail, but this is what we gathered. Yeah. Okay.
Amnesty launched a campaign to appeal the case of Hu Yuhua. And maybe we can talk about the death penalty by using his case. Who is Hu Yuhua and what happened to him?
Yeah, Hu Yuhua, just to give everybody like a quick overview about Amnesty International. So every single year during the World Day Against Death Penalty, the Amnesty International as a movement will choose a few cases to work on, because one of the strengths of Amnesty International is the international solidarity. So then the 7 million strong supporters and members will write to the authorities and call for the to appeal or to call for the release. So for the year of 2017, actually in 2015, we have a case that we work on and then we succeeded. He is Sharul Izzani Supaman. So he was caught when he was barely 19 with drugs. And then he's now about 33 years old now. His case, we will call a magic, because we only work on his case for 2 years and then we succeeded. The Sota of Selangor have granted his clemency and he's now in life imprisonment. Yeah. So that's Sharul Izzani that has succeeded. And then Hu Yuhua is the case for 2017. So it's a movement case. The reason why we choose this case is because the World Day Against Death Penalty theme this year is about poverty. So Hu Yuhua background is kind of like a classic background of a disadvantage of socioeconomic of the family. Like he is born in Pahang. And he stopped going to school when he was 11. And then after that, he was like out looking for jobs. And then after that, he came to Kuala Lumpur to work. Like all the time that after 11 years old, he always be a cook. So the cook is not like you're in a 5-star hotel, Michelin star hotel kind of cook. It's like, you know, like at the hawker center or like at on the street and stuff. Or like in the end, like he was in Kuala Lumpur and then he worked in one of those Chinese restaurants.
Homeless as well?
Sorry?
Was he homeless?
No, he's not homeless. It's just like, you know, like a young child like who's from a small town and then he came to Kuala Lumpur and then mixed with the wrong side of friends, and then he started to gamble, and then he started to do drugs, and in the end, he was caught with drugs in Johor. So, like when he was caught with drugs in Johor, he was only 20 years old. So, so since then, he was since he was detained, so he never go home since he was detained, and then now he's in death row. Yeah, back he's in prison in Pahang.
And what was his offense?
He was caught with drugs. Because in Malaysia, it doesn't matter whether or not you use it for yourself or you actually trafficking. If the amount is over a certain amount that listed in the law, then you are assumed to be traffickers. So this is why he was this is why he's charged under the 39B. Yeah.
Any kinds of drug?
Different drugs has different amount. Yeah.
Okay. So he was arrested almost 12 years ago in 2005. What is his the status of his current case? Has he exhausted all his legal options?
So he has exhausted all his legal process. Like, so he has done the federal court. So right now, the way we are campaigning for him is call for His Majesty, like Sultan of Johor, to grant him the clemency. So this is his this is the last appeal for him, and the family actually already sent in a clemency appeal for him. We haven't heard anything. The family haven't heard anything since then. So we will help sending the appeal for him, like together with the solidarity from the international. So we hope that like the Sultan of Johor were able to grant him the clemency.
Yeah. Is there a precedent for the palace to pardon a certain number of people every year?
This one we also not sure about, right? Because we are not. Until today, we're still not very clear of how the pardons board actually work. What we know of is the pardons board is chaired by the Sultan. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So how much time does who has?
We also don't know because, he's already on death row for about, 6 years from now. Because, it take quite long in the High Court. Before a high court sentence a person to death, so the country won't execute a person or death row inmates if the clemency appeal is still going on. If the answer hasn't come back, then the death row inmates will have to wait. Yeah, so we actually don't know how long he has. Yeah, so of course, the more support that we get, the better chance he has.
So it has to be a no before the state can act on his execution?
Yes, yeah.
For the time being, there's nothing else he can do besides waiting for the response?
Yeah, that's true.
What about in a state? Because you mentioned the case of in 2015 in Selangor. In a state without a monarchy, is there a path to seek clemency?
Yeah. So if a state without Sultan, like for example Kuala Lumpur, like the Wilayah Persekutuan, that then the clemency will go through the Yang di-Pertuan Agong.
Every year, has there been people who have been successfully granted clemency?
I won't say every year because the news from the clemency are not. It's not really something that you can expect. So, when we heard about this, we always very happy. And normally, we don't really know who is this person because on the media, you will only see that, maybe a few years ago or 2-3 years ago, the Sultan of Pera have granted clemency. And then it was only mentioned how many people. And then the same thing with Sultan of Johor when he became Sultan, if not mistaken, or during his birthday, yeah.
So of those who are currently on death row, there's about 1,122. Do we know how many are there because of drug-related offences?
The last figure that we get, like I said before, those information are not made public. So the only way that we can actually find out is through the parliamentary reply. So in the last reply from Minister Dato Sri Azalina Othman Said, she mentioned that from the statistic that prison department provided, there are about or almost 800 death row inmates are there because of drugs.
So why is it bad? This is the mandatory death sentence, right? Why is it a bad thing?
Well, the death penalty for crimes related to drugs is actually not mandatory. It was in the 1980s when there is a rise of drug user. In Malaysia, so the government see this as a national threat. That's why, the sentencing and the Dangerous Drug Act 1952 has been tightened up, and then it's only that time that the traffickers, the 39B, the trafficking, is mandatory death penalty. So, if you look at the, I would like to share with you, just now, the Sharizani case, the judge at that point had said, the High Court judge had said that if he has a choice, he will not sentence Sharizani to death because, he's very young and then, but then because of the way of the law, there's no other choice. He has to sentence him to death. And then if you look at, if it's in 1980s that the government said that this is a threat to the security of the country, and then after how many years now, maybe 30 years, we still have a lot of death row inmates that we caught, like, I mean, the state caught and then is in the death row, like, whether or not really this is actually solving the problems. And also, if you look into these cases, a lot of the time that you will find that it's either the amount is not big, or actually they don't really know that they're actually bringing the drugs. Like, there are a lot of cases about how the drugs are actually hiding in a secret compartment that the person didn't know about. So there's a lot of cases like this. So, like, this is why. And if you look at it's because of the mandatory death penalty. That's why a lot of people are sentenced to death, because the judges has no choice. Yeah.
If the person didn't know that the drug was inserted into their luggage, does that mean that the justice system has failed them because they didn't get adequate counsel, or the lawyer didn't adequately defend them?
Yeah. Actually, this is quite a complex issue, because the way of the Dangerous Drug Act written is different from the penal code, because the Dangerous Drug Act have double assumption. So, like, it is not at the, it is the defense have to prove that the drugs is not theirs, but it's not the other way around, like other criminal proceeding, that the prosecutor had to prove that it is you who did the wrong thing. Yeah, this is one of the big issue of the act. And also, I guess, it is not my place to say that whether or not they have a missed opportunity, or like it's unfair to them because of how the system work. Because I do know that the death row inmates or like people who are charged under this act, they normally will be assigned the lawyer by the court. So like I myself is not a lawyer, so like I probably cannot comment much on this process. But what we know that they do have counsel. But and I think that if you get a junior lawyer, you may not be. I mean, the junior lawyer may not have as much experience as a senior lawyer. So yeah.
So in August, the Law Minister Dato Sri Aslina said that there are plans in the work to remove the mandatory death sentence. Do we know what's going on at the moment?
There's a statement by Minister Azalina that said that in her parliamentary reply, she mentioned that the government agencies and the AGs are looking at the changes on the Dangerous Drug Act. So, like, this is not a law reform for the whole death penalty system, but it's actually just for the Dangerous Drug Act. The suggestion is to give the discretionary power back to the judges.
That is a good news, right?
That's a good news. I would say it's a small baby step towards the abolition of the death penalty as a whole. So like, we congratulate the government on that. So we're just waiting. Now we are patiently waiting for the amendments and also the bill to table to the parliament. So like, it's a very small step, and then Amnesty International Malaysia will still work on the abolition as a whole.
Why is it important for the death penalty to be abolished? So aside from the drug-related offence, so for murderers and rapists, why is it important that we remove it for them too?
Yeah, so that's I guess the general public, even myself before I joined Amnesty International, I always think that, you know, death penalty is so far from me. Like this is my personal perspective, that I think that there is always a set of rules in any games that you play, and that as long as you play the games, then you should know the consequences if you don't follow the rules, right? So that's not my general idea about death penalty as well. So like, if I follow the rules, I don't do anything bad, then death penalty is so far away from me, I will never get there. But then, you know, like, all laws are man-made, and then they're just so possible that something goes wrong, right? So the death penalty is something irreversible. Like, if we found the person guilty today, and then we executed that person, and then for some reason we found that, oh, actually he or she is not the person, the right person, and then we can't really bring this person back. And then there's also always this myth that about the death penalty is a deterrent of the crimes. Like, so we have death penalty means we are safe. Like, look at us, right? Like, we have death penalty for all these heinous and serious crime. Of course, Amnesty International do not downplay of all this, serious crime and stuff. But whether or not the death penalty will actually, like, helpful, like, in prevent all this heinous crime from happening. So if anybody are interested, you can also search the research that have been done before between Singapore and Hong Kong. It is a research called A Tale of Two Cities. So at that point, Singapore has the death penalty and Hong Kong doesn't. So it's a comparison between these two cities. One has death penalty, one doesn't. So like, it showed that the death penalty is not a deterrent for the crimes. Yeah.
Has anyone in Malaysia on death row been exonerated before?
I would like to draw your attention to the very recent case, which happened in Seremban court, where the witness from the police actually caught lying in the courtroom. So he was, you can look it up online about this case. But then
it was a murder case.
It is a drug case.
Drug case.
So this is a drug case because it's very recent. That's why you were able to find more information about it. It's a South Korea boy. His name is Kim. And then the defense lawyer found out that it was because of the defense lawyer that this boy is acquitted. If it's not because of his defense lawyer, for sure he is looking at the death sentence. Yeah. So it's a drug case. And then there's a case that's quite old. It took place in 1979. His name is Kartigesu, and he was charged and tried and convicted for murder of Jean Pereira Sinapapa. So the trial took about 38 days, and then the main witness testified that he witnessed Kartigesu exclaim that Jean did not deserve to live. So the trial judge regarded these words as an incriminating outburst. Interestingly, that the murder weapon never found by the police. And then when Kartigesu appealed to the federal court, after 4 days in court, the witness confessed that he had lied. So according to the court judgment, he had been asked to lie in order to secure Kartigesu's conviction. So this is one of the examples that we have. We never know when the odds are not in the side of a person who is innocent.
So I guess the saying is better to have 9 guilty parties roaming free than to sentence one innocent person to death. So for Malaysians who still have not formed an opinion about the death penalty, what would be your final message to them?
My final message to them would be, like I said just now, like, we understand the crimes that happen are bad, dreadful, and it affects not just the victims, but also the people around the victims and society. But the death penalty have proven multiple times that it is ineffective in deterring the crimes. So we call for, for those who are still neutral in their stand, it is not much for us to call you to do. It's actually just step up and to understand what's going on. Like, I think that's the very, very, very first step that we can all do. Like, maybe just look into Amnesty International release a death sentences report every April. Like, they can look it up online. to know about the situation of Malaysia. So like read more about this, and then whenever they heard about the awareness campaign that's happening around them, if they can come and look into this, like we are not, of course we know that one session probably will not be enough to make someone change their mind. But in our social experiment, we have quite a few people who were neutral, have because of the social experiments and the information that they got, they actually against the death penalty now. It is really like step up and then like just read about it. For more information on what we do, you can find us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. You can find us on Amnesty Mind. For Instagram, it's amnesty_mind. Our website is currently under construction, but for your future reference, it is www.amnesty.mind.
Gwenly, thank you very much for being here today. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.